This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of DC for you, right here on Place to Be Nation Pop, the only all DC Comics podcast here on the Pop Network. And as usual, I am your host, Russell Sellers, joined by the manager, the owner, Todd Weber. How's it going,
Todd? That's just telling tales out of skew, Russell.
Yeah, it is, but, you know, we break kayfabe here occasionally. Kayfabe is over. DC post-crisis management ended months ago.
Okay, all right. So that was kayfabe. So, yes, I am the owner, but much like Vince McMahon, I'll just kind of pretend that I'm not and talk about these things as though I'm just a regular panelist here at Place to Be Nation Pop.
But just out of curiosity, if you were to like sum up life for like a certain group of people, how would you do it?
Life sucks, and then you die.
I'm sorry.
I was not prepared for that. It's been, of course, here on DC for you, it's been a few months since the hard traveling fanboys spoke of such foibles, but yeah,
it is, but it's always funny.
It's not fair. You're expecting me to be ready to my Vince McMahon impression on the fly. That's not fair.
We always have a good time here, though. Vince McMahon impressions are welcome anytime, and they can come out of nowhere, much like a good RKO, which is exactly how I would describe the topic of today's show, is a spectacular RKO delivered out of nowhere. And that would be, of course, Todd, I think you described this as your favorite comic at one point, Justice League of America number 200 from March of 1982.
This is my favorite single comic book of all time, and which is funny because it's one of the, I don't know, first 20 comics I'd ever read in my life. So it peaked early. So there is that familiarity bias of, well, this is one of the things that got me into it. So I love it so much, but it stands the test of time. And then you look at its historical perspective, you know, this is a more than 30-year-old comic,
1982. This comic and I are pretty much the same age.
37.
Yes.
37 years in a row?
Right?
Hey, get back here.
Yeah, get back here. Get back here. Stop following. I'm not going to follow this comic to the park, I promise.
No. Why are these pages all stuck together? This is a great comic for so many reasons, but we'll go over them. But just imagine this being your first thing to get into this team. And I think that's what appealed to 10-year-old me, was that there was this lived in universe. There was all this history, but it was still the Super Friends I knew and loved. And finding out their actual origin, the origin of the Justice League, is recapped here. And I think there was an actual origin story back in Brave and the Bold. There was the first team up, but then they kind of retconned the origin, and it's been retconned many times because this is a totally different continuity than what we have now. But that aspect, and then there was the hero versus hero aspect, which we're going to talk about. Kind of the first time I had ever been exposed to that as a comic reader. But again, 10 years old, you don't have a lot of expectations. I was lucky enough to have a neighbor give me this comic once. And Whoa. So that's how I would go over, and, you know, you used to go to your neighbor's houses a lot more back in the old days.
Sure.
Before you found out about molestation and stuff like that. So you know, your parents would just leave you over there and come back, you know, kind of babysitting, I guess. And I would be reading this comic, and One day they just said, oh, you can just have it. All right, cool. Thank you for the $1.50. $1.50 for this comic. Can you imagine?
It's hard to, considering like how big this issue is. I mean, this is a 72-page book. I mean, that even by today's standards, occasionally you'll get those like 96 giant size, but this is a huge and dense book. There's so much going on in it. And all written by Gary Conway, who is a guy who would like go on to have an even bigger career, and I believe a co-creator of one of your favorite DC characters, Firestorm.
Yeah, and I know it's a G, but I believe it's Jerry Conway. So I'm going to, you know, if you want to call him Gary Conway, I won't correct you again, but I will say Jerry Conway just because that's my familiarity with it. But.
I have always pronounced it that way. Until until I listened to the audiobook Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC, in which the author continuously referred to him as Gary Conway. So I started to wonder, you know, given the in-depth reporting on this story, or the story that's being told in that book, I was like, is it, have I been pronouncing it wrong this whole time? Is it actually Gary?
So maybe that was just the audiobook reader? I don't know.
Could be. Mr. Conway, if you're listening to this, Conway, we would love to get some clarification. We would love to know. Or maybe we could pass that along to our good, close personal friend, Mr. Ben Morse.
Yeah, that is Ben's singular duty, is just to correct pronunciation of names. So, yes, Mr. Conway is co-creator of one of my top three, I guess top two, favorite characters, and that's Firestorm, the Nuclear Man, the original incarnation created in 1978 by Mr. Conway and Al Milgrom. And then after his comic folded in, after five issues, Superman brought him into the Justice League. And so he was kind of the younger member of the Justice League that gave the kids their own perspective. And personality-wise, it's not entirely unlike Spider-Man. You know, he gives you, that younger reader, the perspective, the viewpoint that you relate to when you're younger. So I enjoyed Firestorm, and I liked his powers. And, you know, apart from his weird marimba player sleeves, I do like the costume too.
This was, you know, one of the earlier stories, I guess, with Firestorm, and he featured heavily in this issue throughout. And after reading it, kind of think I started to see exactly why, like, young Todd would have been a huge fan of Firestorm, like how he would have been a character that you could easily relate to. And his power set is kind of cool, being able to transmute things and, like, change their, like, I guess their atomic structure to become something else. So that's,
as long as it's not organic.
As long as,
right?
It's not,
and they,
yes.
They mentioned that a lot. You know, that's our I'm nigh invulnerable when I'm blasting moment. As long as it's not organic, they go out of their way. So as long as there's no carbon, Firestorm can mess with it.
And, I started to, like, really come around on the character of Firestorm in this issue as I read it, because this was my first time ever reading this issue. So it was kind of a revelation to me on several fronts. But we've kind of recapped that there was a recapping of the Justice League's origin at the beginning of this issue. But how would, as someone who's read this many times, how would you sum up the plot for this one for the listeners?
Well, out of nowhere, the original core Justice Leaguers, and one character who I'd never even known about before this, and that's John Jones, depending. Yeah. There it is again, the dubious pronunciation. I believe it's John Jones. But because I didn't have a cartoon representation or a live action representation, I always just read it as Johns. So anyway, he was a new character to me, and he starts off the issue by attacking Firestorm, raiding the satellite, and he's back from Mars. But you learn in the origin recap in the first three pages of the book that he's one of the core original founding members of the Justice League, and it turns out that all of these guys are possessed. All the original Leaguers are possessed, and they are trying to neutralize the newer members of the League and collect, I believe they're collecting artifacts relating to the origin of the Justice League. That's what it turns out. So the newer Leaguers kind of after John Jones beats the crap out of Firestorm, who, you know, Firestorm has some fire. It's a pretty good matchup, right? It would be a logical matchup. The newer members, the second generation of Leaguers, and that is Adam and Elongated Man, Green Arrow, Black Canary, even though Green Arrow is not officially a member at this time, he was the first added member, so he has a long-time history you expect him to see here. Hawkman, Zatanna, and Red Tornado, not my favorite character, all get together and go, well, what's going on with these Justice Leaguers? They form a plan to separate into a strike, one-on-one strike forces and intercept the original Leaguers, and then you get these chapters. The chapters are all written and drawn by, or not written, but all drawn by different artists, which is awesome. That's a specific thing about this book that I adore. And then at the end, the Leaguers, original Leaguers, realize they were duped, and everybody comes back together and kicks the ass of the bad guys, the Apalaxians, I believe is their name, and they were the group of elemental type aliens. You know, you had a crystal guy, a wood guy, a water guy, aliens that brought the League together in the very first place. You know, the League united to battle them. So, great issue.
Yeah, it was a nice little callback there, and kind of gave us the, I guess, one of the earliest examples of the trope of superheroes fighting each other. And building up to the ultimate team-up, of course, to take on the actual villains, who, honestly, for the issue, I would say that the villains come off as pretty stock. There's not really that much interesting going on with them, but you don't read the issue for that. You read the issue for the character dynamics and the interactions between these heroes, and, of course, for, as you just mentioned, some really great artwork from a veritable who's who of DC superstars at the time. You had like George Perez, Jim Aparo, Gil Kane, Carmine Infantino, Joe Kubert, Brian Bolland, and I believe Pat Broderick, and Dick Giordano. Yeah. Easy for me to say.
And he was kind of like the he wasn't the owner of DC, but he's executive vice president at this time. So he did a lot of oversight and kind of helped bring things like the Crisis and the development of the new Teen Titans. He was the boss, basically, the publisher, for all intents and purposes, besides Jeanette Kahn. But he was the guy that was more on the public face, the guy who interacted with the fans and wrote all the editorial columns. So kind of like Stan's soapbox in the 80s in DC for DC. So, but he was also an inker. And he would occasionally pencil things too, but he was best known as an inker. So you would see him inking, say, the George Perez stuff in here at the beginning, and then he got his own chapter to do. And I got to meet him at the famous story that I talk a lot about on my old episode of Conversation Comics, where Tom Coker and I got to go to the, I believe it was the 1993 DC Comics holiday party. And I got to meet Dick Giordano and his wife, and that was pretty cool, among the many, many other comics pros and legends.
Well, that he, among all these others, did like some truly great work. There is not a bad-looking story in the bunch. They all just really sung to me as a reader, and especially like experiencing this for the first time, it really hit me just how, like, aside from the recap at the beginning, just how modern comics this felt and how it seemed to fit with what I think of as like great superhero comics. So getting into it, as listeners of the Marvel Age podcast well know, I have in the past been critical of Gil Kane art from the like 60s and 70s era, but I can say that Gil Kane really shines through in this issue whenever he's drawing the Green Lantern versus the Atom chapter. That I finally get it. Like I finally understand. Gil Kane, great Green Lantern artist. Loved that. But my favorite of these stories I think, was Aquaman versus Red Tornado, simply for the Jim Aparo art. It is gorgeous to look at. I love the way he draws Aquaman, who is, I believe, your favorite character.
Aquaman is my favorite character, and this is one of the origins of that. Love the way Aparo drew him and his function in the story. This felt like a classic Brave and the Bold comic from the 70s or early 80s. Aquaman versus Red Tornado with an assist by the Phantom Stranger, who was occasionally showing up and just kind of being a non-player character in these early Justice League comics. So he's affiliated with the League, but he's kind of like the Watcher here, but he does interfere and turn the tide so that that Aquaman prevails as opposed to Red Tornado, who kind of had him beat or could have taken him out. So Aquaman doesn't necessarily win. He subdues the Red Tornado, but then Tornado's about to ambush him, getting out of the cave with the artifact, and Phantom Stranger knocks him out and lets Aquaman get away. So for what reason, I don't necessarily know. I think he just, like, this is the way it's supposed to go. Better things will come out of this. So, I'm not a huge Phantom Stranger fan. I like it more in the Vertigo perspective of things.
Sure.
But yeah, that chapter is really good. But almost all of these, and I'm not going to say the Flash chapter is necessarily my favorite. Infantino was kind of the definitive Flash artist for a long, long time, at least the Barry Allen, Silver Age Barry Allen artist. And once in a while, I would really like an Infantino comic, but generally the faces were too wide, and there was just art-wise, I never got it. But then you realize that he was a DC executive too. He kind of had a job for life.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that was always like at the, like, he was more than just an artist. He was working the business side of it. He had a real mind for the business, as they might say. Now, and I can kind of agree with you on that. I didn't really care for his faces, especially some of the weird ways that he drew Elongated Man in this issue. Uh-huh. Some of that really didn't work for me, although I do like the way he renders Flash a lot. But if you were to pick one of these chapters as your absolute favorite based on, like, art and, of course, on writing, since Mr. Conway wrote all of it, which of these really sings to you? Which one is the best one?
Well, now you're asking me to pick a favorite child.
I am.
That's not fair.
That's not fair.
That's not fair. It's got to be the Green Arrow, Black Canary versus Batman, drawn by Brian Bolland. A rare interior art by Bolland, famous artist from The Killing Joke and Camelot 3000 and other things too. But mostly known as a cover artist. And this is just, the artwork is beautiful and clean. The line work is outstanding. And you get Batman being Batman, Green Arrow being Green Arrow. It's classic stuff. So I would reread that over and over. That 5-page chapter. I remember reading that over and over and over. That's my favorite part of this book. But it's, again, all wonderful. It's all Silver Age goodness. Actually, late Bronze Age goodness. Pre-Crisis. Probably, to me, this is the best, objectively, the greatest pre-Crisis comic book I'd ever read. And it's still my favorite comic book.
And, you know, as I was reading it, I think you and I talked about this a little bit off air, but I think that this may replace Teen Titans number one, or New Teen Titans number one, as my new favorite Bronze Age comic, just because this spoke to, like, all the things I love about the Justice League. It really brought the heat, if you will. And it was one of those that, as I was reading it, I kept thinking, This would be a great first comic. Like, if you said, if somebody came to you and said, what is it that makes DC Comics great? Put this book in their hands and say, read this and you'll see for yourself. This is it. And I'm glad you brought up the Brian Bolland art, because on page 41 of this issue is when you get that big splash page of Batman ambushing Green Arrow and Black Canary with the cape all furled out, and him like diving in to surprise them. The rendering on that is so good. I mean, you can tell that this image here is probably what influenced most of modern Batman stories. I think that every Batman artist has tried to recreate the feeling of this moment on and pretty much every major Batman story since. I can recall an image there very similar to this from Hush, similar to this from the Snyder Capullo Court of Owls run. So and of course, like Frank Miller definitely pulled from this for like Dark Knight Returns and Year One. So yeah, all of that is right here in this issue. So hugely influential piece that I think anyone who's just getting started in DC or anyone who's been a DC fan for a long time, this is one of those issues you have to have read. And I am ashamed of myself for never having read it before. But that has been corrected, and now I've read it like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like I haven't talked about this. This is one of those things I bring up a lot, is how much I love this comic. But you also get some guest stars. You get Adam Strange rescuing Hawkman from drifting in space, capturing him with the Zeta Beam. And so that's a character that you would have in Silver Age Justice League stories quite a bit. So nice homage to him, or a nice tribute to him. You get Snapper Carr, who is
the Rick Jones
Justice League equivalent of Rick Jones. 100%.
Can we like have a moment where we like put him and Rick in a rocket, or just fire them out of a cannon into the sun?
Yeah, they should be in the Phantom Zone for sure.
Or lock them both in the Negative Zone, so that we never have to see them ever again. Of course, that would, you know, free Captain Marvel up to do his thing. But I digress. that he was easily the worst part of this issue. But one thing I absolutely loved about this was that Snapper Carr doesn't get to play superhero sidekick. He shows up in the satellite watchtower, and he just stays there. They're like, no thanks, kid. We got this. The snapping thing is real annoying, and when Firestorm starts doing it, he pretty much gets scolded from the jump, which was another moment that I was kind of marking for. But yes, Snapper Carr proves to be the Rick Jones of DC Comics. And there was another shot at Marvel in this issue when you have the Justice League saying, or the narration saying, they have no need for a battle cry. They're the Justice League.
Yeah, they don't need one.
No.
That's my favorite panel in the whole book. And I wish it were inked with a little bit more definition. It's definitely penciled well with the whole team reunited and coming after the bad guys. I mean, it's epic. Just a tremendous layout. I wish I could have seen the original pencils on that, because it's blown up super big. You know, it's a 2-page spread.
And I believe that's Joe Kubert who drew that.
No, it's Perez.
Is it?
It's definitely Perez. I don't know who inked it. And maybe Giordano who inked Perez, but it's 100% Perez.
Okay.
I know that he did all the framing sequence stuff. So,
and he drew the
Kubert only did the Superman Hawkman stuff, and you can definitely tell it's him.
Oh, for sure. Like that. And that chapter might have been like one of the oddest ones to me, because the whole Adam Strange thing comes out of nowhere. Yeah. And it threw me a little bit. But they bring it back around. They don't go too far out into left field with that one. So it all comes back around and winds up working really well, I think. And what do you think about this will be the kind of last thing I want to mention. What'd you think about the big knockdown drag out fight scenes at the end?
Pretty great introduction to what the Justice League is best at, you know, combining powers, combining forces. You have your strike teams go out towards each one of the Apalaxians. And each chapter has, you know, 4 or 5 Justice Leaguers and 3 or 4 Justice Leaguers taking on each of these creatures, and you know, it's good because you get to see them literally working as a team, combining their powers, using unique ways to get after the bad guys, and then at the end they vanquish them and then send them, I think they send them into the sun, right? They crush them up and Green Lantern and Red Tornado send them off into the sun.
Yeah, they just like gather them all up in a nice basket are in a kind of this dome thing. Red Tornado, oddly enough, is there to help create a vortex for them to go from this little capsule into the sun, despite there being no like air, gravity, or anything for Red Tornado to really work with there. But we digress.
It's the solar winds.
Yes, don't know. we'll run with that. That sounds fine to me. And I'm with you. I really liked the way this wound up, and the little tease there at the end about, is Green Arrow now just going to leave the team again? After, you know, working so closely with him, I know that he's had his differences with everyone, but then he's like kind of there in that little last bit of panel, he turns around and says, nah, I'm just kidding. I'm in. And
yeah. And again, comics, the timeline of comics is so funny, because you'd think that this would be a nice long-term situation. We only got another, 2 years of comics, of Justice League comics monthly, before they blew it all up and did the Detroit era.
Yeah.
So after Justice League Annual number 2.
All right. And well, I think that's, is there anything else you want to add about this issue? Anything we haven't talked about?
No. Why haven't you read this issue, people? Read this issue.
You know, I understand. I take that hit. I'll take that. Like, why haven't I read this? Pure neglect on my part. Pure neglectful ignorance, because I was that post-crisis DC fanboy who just kind of scoffed at the Bronze Age for so long and for too long. But you know what? The DC Universe app is helping to correct a lot of this, because all those great classic comics are available right now, and that's how I read this one. So if you don't have a subscription to that service, try it out. Take the trial. I think that you'll be very pleased with what you find, especially if you're looking for a lot of comics to read. They have exploded the amount of stuff that's available there. So between that and all the video content, it's fantastic stuff. So I think that's about it for this episode, Todd. So I guess we should tell the people where they can find us and where they can comment on all this.
Yeah, first and foremost, like Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook and join us there. Check out my Twitter, which is at Todd Weber Guitar. And that's pretty much it. But subscribe to Place to Be Nation Pop if you don't already. Rate, review, and like us.
Absolutely. And you, of course, you can hit me on the old Twitter machine and the Instagram machine at Russell_Sellers. It's same name to both. Of course, also follow the at PTBN Comics on Twitter and join the Facebook group and talk all sorts of comics with us, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Greg and Nick, and of course, join us for Marvel Age whenever an episode of that drops. We got all sorts of comic book podcasts, and Conversation Comics is back in the mix. We are loving that, Todd. I love you and Tim going over X-Men comics. It's gonna we're gonna double dip whenever Marvel Age finally gets there, but it's gonna be fun.
Yes, yeah. I don't mind talking about Burn Claremont era comics on multiple podcasts. It's gonna be okay.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should have a problem with that. They're wonderful, but. In that case, folks, thank you for joining us for DC4U, and we will see you guys again next time.
For you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceOfNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceOfNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, DC4U listeners. It's the manager, Todd Weber, and I'm here to tell you all about the things going on PlaceToBeNation.com right this second. Over on PTBN Pop, we've got the Hard Traveling Fanboys, as ever, weekly, with a brand new countdown edition of their show, looking at the best rogues galleries in comics. I'm sure the Legion of Superheroes, many villains are not on the list. Myself, the manager, I brought back Weber Has Issues a couple weeks ago. We were talking about, me was talking about three Marvel comic books and how accessible they are. I talked about Marvel's Epilogue, History of the Marvel Universe number one, and House of X. Check it out. It's a good listen. Over on Talkin' Pop, Jenny and Tim flipped the script by welcoming multi-show host and multi-talented Andy Atherton for a journey that touches on Andy's ventures as a podcaster, producer, screenwriter, bartender, DJ, and choreographer. Wow. Pop goes the movies, and the movies go pop when Andy and Arsenio D'Amato get together and discuss Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from our friend Quentin Tarantino. Brand new Sunday Groove just dropped. David and Andy Helene discuss their personal Desert Island discs. JT Rosero joined Andy Atherton to talk about Kevin Smith's Dogma in the latest and greatest episode of Laugh-In Theater. DC4U last week talked about Justice League, the best stories, adapted media, creators on the DC4U podcast. We also talked about the Snyder Cut. Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament continues on Facebook. There are 6 polls a day posted. We're in round 2 right now. Get in on the action by searching Facebook for PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament. Like the page. You'll get to vote every single day. Be sure to weigh in. Over at the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed of podcasts, SummerSlam 2019 was in the books. We have a pair of instant recap shows for you. On Chain Reaction, Nate, Scott, Jenny, and Brent broke down the weekend's events. And on the monthly PPV Reaction Show, Chris and Devin dive in and give their thoughts on the SummerSlam. Talking WCW is back. Greg, Tim, and Jenny dissecting a trifecta of matches featuring Rey Mysterio. Halloween Havoc 97, greatest match of all time. In New Wrestling Warzone, Chad and JT look into a memorable night of wrestling TV by examining the January 22nd, 1996 Raw and Nitro head-to-head matchup. On Main Event, Scott, Steve, and Nate talk SummerSlam, and we're joined by Pete Schumacher, Ben Zani, to recap this year's Scenic City Invitational, the SCI. Ben and Pete also broke down the full 2019 SCI weekend on Row 1, Seat 1. We are your SCI headquarters, what can I say? On episode 2 of the Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, John, and Jenny take a look at February 1994's The Night the Line Was Crossed. And on episode number 7 of You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew introduces Jordan to Tsuruta versus Tenryu from June 5th, 1989. That was a long time ago. We also have our tribute to 1994 on the website, PlaceToBeNation.com. Lots of great content, movie stuff, baseball stuff, written content. Read. I know you can. Also, Draft Wars crew was back. We had SummerSlam matches. You can look at that article and choose your favorite. I voted for Jenny. Mention Glenn. And we also have the weekly walk around the web. Every Wednesday, Glenn Butler gives a litany of very interesting links for you to click on and read. Funny stories all. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today. Start researching your list. Bye.